Hello, and welcome to another Ometown Daily News Show. I am Mayor Watt. That is Ometown.com. I stream here on Twitch, and it gets copied over to YouTube and to the various podcasting locations, or podcast locations, including Spotify and Google and Apple and elsewhere. Anywhere that you can get a podcast listed, I should be there now. I have done 161 episodes. Today is day 161 of 2022. This is the show for June 10th, 2022. I already have selected a broad swath of articles that have been aggregated into Ometown. And by going through Ometown, you can visit a whole bunch of news providers. I aggregate news into six main categories: create, news, education, entertainment, social, and technology. And within those is about 50 channels, locations, call it, within Ometown that I hope that you stop by and visit. Obviously, I would prefer you to also come here and hang out with me on Twitch, but I'm also over on YouTube and Twitter and Discord, which doesn't have anybody in it, really. I don't really hype it. But I'd really like to see more people. If you find the summary of the news interesting, you want to talk about something, feel free to get in touch with me or come over to Twitch. I do the show at 11 o'clock because of some issues within, I'll just say that they are within Ometown. I've been prevented from doing it on the regular at 11 o'clock, but from now on until sometime around probably September, if not longer. It really depends on how much engagement I get here. I would like to stream more. That said, right now I'm only sticking to the news, and I'd love to see people more often. I might start streaming some games that are kind of chill and allow us to talk, that don't require me to be hypervigilant. Okay, well, anyway, let's get into today's show. There was actually something else that I wanted to talk about first before we get into the news. It's because there's an article. You know what? Let's just get into the news. It'll be fun. So my very first article that I selected is this one right here. NASA gets serious about UFOs. Without getting too into it, I find this kind of interesting. I'm not really big on any particular mindset about this. You know, is it a conspiracy to get more money? There's a lot of people that are talking about, well, little cohorts of people that are talking about this in different ways. This is a big, black project that somebody can exploit the fear, uncertainty, and doubt of whatever it is that's going on out there into boosting budgets. Why? Because we don't know what's going on. And when the government and the military and others are all saying we don't know what's going on, it kind of encourages those with the purse strings to loosen them up a bit so that people can do this research. So let me go straight over to the source, and it's over at fizz.org. And whenever we're talking about these UAVs or UFOs or mysterious vehicles that are flying around, apparently more than capable of eluding us in identifying them, it always has this video now, which was probably the most overt acknowledgement that something in the skies is unidentified. So it says the space agency on Thursday announced a new study that will recruit leading scientists to examine unidentified aerial phenomena. That's the UAP thing. A subject that has long fascinated the public and recently gained high-level attention from Congress. The project will begin early this fall and last around 9 months. I think it's going to have longer legs than this. In the overall scheme of things, I think that there's something that's already, that's been in progress for quite some time, but it isn't publicly known. That's largely because there might be some discoveries made that strategically or tactically shouldn't be divulged, really. There are times where it's a violation of my desire for transparency, openness, you know, and light being shined on things, where it has to be done in the shadowy halls of something like the CIA or whatever. And depending on what the context of this is, yeah, I think that it shouldn't be public. That said, when information is exposed, I don't think that it should be a criminal activity for a whistleblower if there is abuse associated with it. So there's a lot of context. And I know that people in my sphere of influence are getting kind of tired of me saying context matters, but it really does. In this particular instance, it's going to be a NASA project that's going to be hunting for UFOs and trying to identify them. Great. Let's see what comes of it. Some people will say, oh, it's just a waste of money. But when you have organizational units that are coming out of the woodwork saying we don't even know, and it's acknowledged by the government, it's acknowledged by senior leadership, that there is something and we don't know what it is, yet it's there. I think that investigation is warranted, even if it is something that is more and more difficult to identify. And apparently this all stems from an upgrade in tracking hardware, and it discovered that these things were flying around battle groups that were on either patrols or training operations out in the waters and who knows where else. So I think it's pretty cool. I want to know if it's some high-tech drone that's out there. I would love to know what this tech is, but there's too many questions. So let's just move on to the next article. The next article is in... it was filed into the Word in Tech, but it's about Star Trek. Strange New Worlds reminds you filler TV is fantastic. This is an article over at The Verge. I'm going to click the link and take us over to Alex Kranz, who wrote this article for The Verge. And it says, TV doesn't have to be high stakes, end of the world situations. And the title says, reminds you filler TV is fantastic. In the age of thunderingly loud blockbusters and hyper-serial prestige television, Star Trek has struggled. I don't think so. The J.J. Abrams films tried to reinvent Star Trek for the mega-action film era, and Star Trek Discovery tried to reinvent it for serial TV, and others, like Picard and Lower Decks, have just tried to play to the fans with intense nostalgia and in-jokes. Interesting take. They've all been Star Trek, but they haven't had quite the same impact as the original series or the Star Trek series of the 90s. Well, hate to break it to this author. Who is this again? Alex Kranz. The original series wasn't particularly well-received. As far as I know, it became a cult classic as time went on to become what it is now. They challenged a lot of historical preconceived notions about what society should be, and that was its intent. But I don't think it was particularly well received. I need to do something real quick, so... Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. The thing became a thing as time went on. Now, Strange New Worlds. It says here in this article, watching Strange New Worlds feels like watching The Next Generation or Voyager or even the original series. It's Star Trek updated pitch perfectly for 2022, and that's a large part because it knows what we want, filler episodes. And that's really not this last episode. So season one, episode six, was spectacular in provoking a response and discussion around the topic of it. I don't want to spoil it, but you know, when I have people that are around me watching it start asking questions because they're trying to gauge the deeper meaning of this, and you have people that are thinking critically about it and trying to extrapolate the messaging from this to that, whatever that is, right? So I practice something called associative thinking. So nothing is necessarily just for pure entertainment. I can do that. But if I want to think deeper about something, then I can, you know, start the process and discuss it. And this last episode was spectacular in doing so because it basically made you think, and spoiler alert, fast forward, I don't know how long, you're just going to have to jump through if you're listening to this, but it provoked the idea that one person's suffering could save a whole host of other people. I mean, it's obviously kind of hyperbolic in its context because it's high tech, high science, it's future, it's everything, right? So this had what amounts to taking somebody and using them as the controller for something that basically saves the planet. And when you're watching it with people that start thinking about it, and then you're with somebody like me who says, well, I mean, we do this all the time. There is a whole cohort of people out there that are suffering greatly while we have billionaires. And we equivocate. We ignore it. We say, well, you know, those people worked really hard for their billions, and those other people over there just aren't working hard enough. You know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and all of that garbage. It's an impossibility. And there's a lot of people that are right now, and they're born into generational poverty and lack of opportunity, lack of education. There are places in your hometown, I guarantee you, that people look at and go, oh, it's that side of the street. And that's because we have perpetuated the acceptance of that side of the street instead of using our resources to raise everybody up. You can't do that because you can't be a billionaire if you allow everybody to have equity and equality and opportunity. That's just not how it works, right? Right? No, that shouldn't be how it works, but that's apparently how it works. When you've got people that are complaining that they can't take a break to go to the bathroom, they have to pee in a bottle, yet a CEO is making $200 million a year, we have some issues here. So you can look at something like Star Trek as filler TV, and that's what it is to you. But this last episode in particular was not filler TV. There was a lot of issues there, right? I struggle to try and tie this to other things that make sense to people, other than if you've ever gone out with somebody and you really get along with them, but they say or they do something that kind of drives you nuts and you want to walk away, but that's not the totality of your feelings, right? That's not what you should be thinking when you're watching Star Trek Strange New Worlds or anything in Star Trek. It usually has some type of provocative angle to it. And I'm not talking about cinematography. I'm talking about the messaging. There's deeper meaning in a lot of the shows. from the original series, the first interracial kiss, to the episode last night, which basically said the suffering of one is fine if it saves a whole lot of people. And then the struggle that of the relationship that is founded on that realization. So I don't think it's filler TV unless you want it to be filler TV. And we all have that range. We all have the ability to go from, oh, let's just have a good watch, to, wow, there's a deeper meaning there. And you can listen to podcasts that talk about this kind of stuff. And it's all about their particular angle on it, whoever might be talking about it. So I would love to watch a show with somebody that has this particular perspective and ask more questions. Why do you think this way? Not calling anybody out, just saying that there is more meaning there if you allow it to exist. Although I could make a more provocative statement, which is, if we didn't test for COVID-19, obviously there wouldn't be a pandemic, right? Let's go on to the next article. U.S. inflation hits four-decade high of 8.6%. U.K. families cut back on food and cost of living squeeze. And this is an article over at The Guardian. And I'm just going to go over something real quick here. There's a historical thing here that I've been looking at, but really not digging too far into, mainly because I've looked at this year after year, decade after decade, really. Finally talking about it publicly, whereas I had been previously talking about it with people within my domain. And the concern here is that this is something new, and it certainly is not. Maybe the context, the specifics of it are new, but this is an 8.6 increase in the consumer price index, right? So let me grab something real quick. And this is really an estimate based on the first quarter of the year. And I am predicting that we're going to probably hit around 11 to 12 by November in the estimate. By the end of the year, we will be at the 11 to 12 rate. And so looking back at this, I had seen in the numbers, the historical numbers, that back in 1960, when AOPEC was created, not AOPEC, but there was an organization called AOPEC, which is the Arab Oil Producing Nations. It has since grown and is referred to as OPEC. Well, in 1960 is when it was created, and then Nixon provoked a response by OPEC, the oil-producing nations, to put an embargo on the United States, and that caused an oil and gas shock. Arguably, let's just say arguably, because within a year and a half, the embargo was ended, but the reduction in the price never came back down. It went from basically $20 a barrel all the way up to $120 a barrel within that year. So between 73 and 74, 75, you see this massive spike in oil prices, even though the embargo ended. And that is largely because people were making money on oil futures. At least based on my understanding of it. I would love to have a more meaningful conversation with others if there is somebody that wants to talk about it. But trading in oil became very lucrative for those who had the means to invest in it. And the volatility of oil and gas has never been more volatile than it is since 1973. Since the Yom Kippur War, where Nixon gave Israel $2 million, I think it was, and in response, the OPEC nations put an embargo on the United States. And that is the trifecta of where we are now with oil prices being extremely we'll just call it squishy. And right now, crude prices are on par with the time frame of the oil and gas shock of 78, 79, 80, 81. But not yet the peak of the 2008 shock of the 2008 recession here in the United States. So again, my claim is that the reason why we are in this inflationary trend is due to oil and gas. That's it. It's profit taking over the decline from 2019, 2020, 2021, even though they got record profits. And for whatever reason, now is the time. And so I had said a couple of days ago that I predict that this will continue for 10 years. We will still feel these effects of inflation for 10 years. And the consumer price index is matching that prediction because it's, to me, it's following the same trend of the 1973, 74, 75 and on period, all the way up to 83, from 73 to 83. There was a rapid increase in the CPI following the effects of the oil and gas shock. I don't think that the prices will decline. It will continue. Okay, so this is the fastest rate in 40 plus years, and this is an estimate. This is not the real number. This is an estimate, 8.6 inflation. And I think, again, by the end of the year, it'll be closer to 11 or 12. So let me continue on with the next article. There was some ruckus yesterday when Congress held hearings, basically, regarding, and it's really they're divulging the information that they have acquired since the 2020 election. And in that notice to everybody, they plop out there a video of Ivanka Trump basically saying, you know, we knew it was bunk or something like that. Accepted, sorry, the phrase was that she accepted that Attorney General Bill Barr had found no problems with the election, nothing that would be substantial enough to overturn an election. And so just like clockwork, immediately Trump trots out Ivanka Trump doesn't understand elections after she disowned him, disowned his claim that the 2020 vote was stolen. So I'm going to click this link. Takes us over to Business Insider. Alexandra Ma is the author of this article. And, you know, she had been all the rage and everything, oh, brilliant and all of this. But suddenly, you know, she doesn't understand elections. Sure. She said she was swayed by former Attorney General Bill Barr, who rejected pressure from Donald Trump to endorse his fraud claims. Barr has separately described those claims as BS. So, yeah, I mean, this is this is what I've witnessed in the news and in what I've read is this is the kind of status quo. You say anything counter to what is desired and you get ostracized. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that gets recanted. So you're either lying to Trump or you're lying to Congress. One will land you in jail. Although if you're wealthy and white, I doubt you'll end up in jail. And politically connected, by the way. So let's continue on. I don't want to end up in this too deep today. The next article is over in the Hatch Ideas channel. Job cuts hit cybersecurity industry despite surging growth from ransomware attacks. I'm just going to click the link and takes us over to CNBC in an article by Ari Levy and Jordan Novit. Security companies are seeing, pardon me one second. Yes, I'm going to leave all of this in the show. Cybersecurity companies are seeing record growth as ransomware attacks increase and businesses bolster spending to protect their data. Usually large businesses are doing that, not small businesses. They don't have time or money for somebody that's focused on cybersecurity. And that's why each state really needs a state-driven auditing service that can help facilitate small businesses mitigate their risk to cybersecurity concerns. I would love to do that as a service from my business, but the cost right now is just too high. And the liability, it means that if you rely on some consultant to come in and they don't have the insurance to bear the burden of something when you fall on your face as a business owner and get breached and your customers' data gets exfiltrated from your business, you will be held responsible for it, even though you made the attempt. If the attempt was still inferior, that liability, you would be liable for the breach, and the people that provided the audit would be liable for the breach. But there's a whole trail of litigation coming down the line from that. So like I said, the liability and the sophistication of it as a business process and as a technological concern just outstrips the resources for a small business. And so, like I said at the beginning of the statement, we need state-driven solutions, since that's where businesses are formed, within the state, and federally driven data out to the individual states, kind of like what NIST does, NSA does. Well, there are policies, there are procedures, but they aren't mandated. There are no audits, really, although I think it's coming. Says, however, the plunge in tech stocks and freezing of the IPO market has forced a number of high-growth companies to cut jobs. We were not optimized as a business, said CyberReason CEO Lior Div. Says, nothing has lowered CyberReason's expectations for growth. Rather, the continuing rise in ransomware attacks has forced its clients to bolster spending on security systems, putting the security company ahead of schedule when it comes to revenue. So why are there job cuts, right? We know that there are something like 100,000 positions that are needed. People that get cybersecurity certifications at the entry level. Really, businesses want people coming out of high school or two-year college already fully skilled up, and that's just not how it really happens. You can get some baseline education, but until you're in the trenches, kind of like an attorney, you can go to law school and they confirm how you think and mold you into a more effective litigator. But the reality is, until you're in the trenches and guided by somebody that has seniority, you're basically untested. And certifications alone, just the degree, doesn't mean anything. But the application does. And so education and the students themselves just can't foot that bill. There are baselines, and depending on the school, those resources, and it speaks all the way back to what I was saying previously about you can't have billionaires if everybody has equality, right? So in schools that have a bigger budget, you get better education because there are more resources available, and it doesn't come cheap. In fact, a lot of resources in the tech sector are so expensive that many community colleges in particular can't just do everything that a potential employer wants. So they say the war in Ukraine makes matters worse. The crisis has intensified this year with cyber attacks from Russia on the rise following the country's invasion of Ukraine in February. I think that's opportunistic, and there's always, it just takes motivation and people feel empowered when they have the ability to look back and say, well, this is why I'm doing it and everybody else is doing it. Well, yeah, that's not really how it works. It's still a crime. Let's continue on to the next article. It's over in the Law Nerd channel. Lawyer is happier and better paid after quitting her job to become a pet psychic. A Philadelphia lawyer who was miserable with her $75,000 a year job as a real estate lawyer couldn't be happier after switching careers. This is over at abajournal.com. And it's written by Deborah Cassens Weiss, who to me might appear as the primary writer for ABA Journal. My goodness. Every time I aggregate something, it seems to come from Deborah Cassens Weiss. Anyway, I love this. If you are an attorney and you aren't interested in your job anymore, maybe you can be a pet psychic. She charges $350 per hour and makes more money than she did as a lawyer. Baskinaz offers psychic readings as well as training for people who want to learn how to communicate with their pets. Baskinaz asks for a photo of the animal before the reading, along with information on its name, gender, and names of the people the animal lives with. During the reading, Baskinaz studies the animal's photo and telepathically asks a series of questions. When I'm communicating with the animal, sometimes I see images flash across my eyes, or I'll hear particular phrases, she said. I don't hear their accents or tone of voice, but I can always sense their personality. Do you know how good that would be if you were in the courtroom? I'm sure everybody would totally buy into the idea that you are speaking with pets. I'm going to move on. $350 an hour. I need to reconsider my life choices, folks. This next article is in the Order of the Grape channel. Basically, it's a group for those who are interested in wine. Welshman breaks Guinness World Record for most pubs visited in a day, but there's a catch. I'm going to click this link because this article is aggregated kind of weirdly. This is an article over at Vine Pair by Nicolette Baker. And it says on February 5th, Jareth Murphy, 29, beat the Guinness World Record for the amount of bars visited in 24 hours by one person. His venture included 56 pubs throughout Cardiff, the capital city of Wales in the UK. The person is an IT professional, started with a lemonade at 10 a.m., weaving his way through the city to nearly 300 pubs, weaving his way through the city's centers, nearly 300 pubs and bars within the half-mile urban area. He concluded at 9:26 p.m., telling Guinness World Records that the challenge was the hardest thing he's ever done in his life. Let me see something here. Murphy's February 2022 quest beat out the previous holder, Matt Ellis, who visited 51 pubs. So let's see, 56 pubs is what he visited, and the other person visited 51, so just barely making it. Let's see, according to Guinness World Records, this wasn't Murphy's first attempt at beating the world record, or a world record, but it was one that he felt most confident in achieving. Interesting. So you can actually get in the Guinness Book of World Records for a lot of things. Just find your niche. It's like a PhD. You just have to push the envelope. Probably not making a lot of fans from PhD holders. The next article is in the Word in Tech. That's where it was aggregated to from The Guardian. Tesla investigation deepens after more than a dozen autopilot crashes. Seems like a software issue to me. Regulators to look at with enhanced scrutiny after cars with driver assistance function crashed into parked emergency vehicles. I'm not quite sure why this is actually taking place, but the NHTSA is on the ball looking at it. Tesla's, I'm sure, looking into it. But it says, after more than a dozen Tesla cars crashed into parked first responder vehicles over a period of 4 years. I actually saw a video of one of these where the Tesla just didn't stop. The next article, let me stop that and move on to the next one. This next article is in the Mobile channel, and it's super worms capable of munching through plastic waste. So I'm going to click the link, take us over to fizz.org, and these are the worms. This article is at fizz.org by Issam Ahmed, and it says, Styrofoam munching superworms could hold key to plastic upcycling. Scientists at Australia's University of Queensland have now discovered that superworms, the larvae of Zaphobus morio, darkling beetles, are eager to dine on the substance, and their gut enzymes could hold the key to higher recycling rates. Excuse me. Chris Rinke, who led the study that was published in the journal Microbial Genomics on Thursday, told AFP previous reports had shown that tiny waxworms and mealworms, which are also beetle larvae, had a good track record when it came to eating plastic, so we hypothesized that the much larger superworms can eat even more. Superworms can grow up to 2 inches and are bred as a food source for reptiles and birds, or even for humans in countries such as Thailand and Mexico. So they confirmed that superworms can survive on a sole polystyrene diet and even gain an amount of weight compared to a starvation control group. Aw, that's sad. Which suggests that the worms can gain energy from eating polystyrene. And that's the polystyrene that they used. Not hard plastic, folks. But maybe this is a means to an end. I'm not sure what the thing on the other side is, or what the nutritional value of these worms are after they've been consuming a diet consisting of polystyrene. It says, ultimately, we want to take the superworms out of the equation, he said, and he now plans to more research aimed at finding the most efficient enzymes, which, once enhanced, can be used to break down the products. Hopefully this doesn't become something out of control like, oh, I don't know, COVID. The next article is in the Mobile channel. And it involves Sriracha. If you are a fan of Sriracha, the maker warns of unprecedented shortage of popular products after a crop failure. So Wei Fong Foods, the company behind the popular Wei Fong brands of Sriracha and chili sauces, warned retailers and customers in April of a severe shortage of the peppers used to make its sauces, blaming weather conditions affecting the quality of chili peppers. Unfortunately, this is out of our control, and without this essential ingredient, we are unable to produce any of our products due to the shortage. Basically, things are going to be sold on the black market, and I'm pretty sure that you'll be able to buy it, but it'll be $1,000 a bottle. I don't know for sure what it's going to end up being. Anyway, this article is over at thehill.com. Written by Braden Stamps, Michael Bartiromo, and Nexstar Media Wire. Interesting. So let's see if there's anything else in this article that you can go and glean. There's always substance of some kind. I don't know how deep it'll be. It says it's possible a chili shortage could have wide-ranging impacts on supermarkets and restaurants, as Sriracha-style sauces are not only used independently but also as an ingredient in many other spicy condiments like spicy mayo and etc., etc. So, again, I come to the conclusion that we need vertical farming inside warehouses that aren't as susceptible to environmental impacts. As long as it's done right and you plan properly, you can grow pretty much anything. It will take power, but if you use solar power or wind energy or any other source of energy to activate lights, you can get a pretty darn good yield. And all it takes is planning and some hard work. Okay, so, and even in the mega proportions that are required, it can still be done in a protected environment and vertical instead of, it just takes us changing the dynamic. Instead of relying on the nutrients that are born in the soil, and we actually pump nutrients into the soil just to be absorbed, and then it all gets burned off by evaporation and insects and other things, fungus and whatever else. You really can control all of that in a more lab-like environment of a vertical farm. This next article is over in the continuity report. Let me just continue on. Get through this set of news and you can go on about your day. But I'm happy to stay and talk if there's anybody in my chat. This next article is in the continuity report. Be the Ghostbuster. Sony is bringing two new VR games immersing you in Spectre fighting training to 400 locations this year. I'm just going to click this link and pull us over to Variety.com in an article by Todd Spangler, which is awesome considering Ghostbusters. Anyway, it says, don't cross the stream. Sony Pictures Virtual Reality is gearing up to launch Ghostbusters VR Academy, which will let fans of the 38-year-old movie franchise train to become Ghostbusters themselves. Ghostbusters VR Academy is slated to be available globally at Hologate's 400 locations by the end of 2022. That's pretty darn limited in its reach. I would love to have this. One of the problems that I have with a lot of things that are interactive is there is no resistance on the other side. So there's nothing that's going to be pulling on my VR Ghostbuster proton accelerator, or my proton pack. There isn't going to be anything that is immersing me with some type of a physical response. If I lay down a ghost trap or get slimed or whatever, there's nothing there. It's one of the problems that I have with VR sword fighting. There's no resistance. There's nothing hitting my sword for me to have to walk away from, step back from, reset, or parry off of so that I can actually do more realistic sword fighting. It just doesn't exist. And we may never get to that point. I don't see the physics ever becoming that perfected. That said, I think anything that increases that immersion in a VR environment would be great. I just think that I'd like to have it locally, right here in my office, instead of having to go to some other location. If I can afford the equipment, I might as well be able to do it at home. Not trying to turn everybody into a shut-in, but for crying out loud, it's software and hardware. Unless there's something proprietary in there, let us all have it. At least purchase it, rent it, I don't know. Do seasons so that we're always paying into it. I don't know. I'd rather pay a monthly fee and have access to it and updates than have to go periodically to some place. The next article is over in the Warcrafters channel, and that's about first-person shooters or real-time simulators, role-playing games, MMORPG kind of things. This next article is called, the title is, Take a Deep Dive into Dangerous Realms in Co-op Survival Game Nightingale. This is coming out at some point, but I'm not sure when. I am on the list. I'm hopefully going to be asked to be a beta tester. That would be great. But it says, just make sure you craft enough weapons to deal with what you find inside. So it's basically kind of like a steampunk, Victorian steampunk world where humans discovered magic and started messing with portals to strange new worlds, which is not the Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Now you've become trapped in a distant realm filled with magic and monsters, and there's only one way to survive. Get crafty, chopping trees, chipping at boulders, hunting for food. It's a co-op base builder, MMO style game, actually. And I would love for it to get launched because I love steampunk. At one point in my existence, I wanted to reshape my house inside and hint at it outside that it was more steampunky in style of Victorian, but I don't have a Victorian house. So I am postponing this. It may never even happen. But I love even that anachronistic kind of lifestyle where you are taking on the steampunk mythos. Yeah. Anyway, it's called Nightingale, and you can actually watch this video. I won't watch it. I typically don't play other people's media on my channel or in the podcast or anywhere, really. But I do encourage you to go over, follow the link, go through Ohmtown to these other locations, and basically the whole world branches off of the streets of Ohmtown. It is an electronic existence, so you just... you visit Ohmtown, you hop on an electron, you follow it over to these other locations, wherever they may be in the omniverse that is Ohmtown. So come on by, become a citizen of Ohmtown, go over to ohmtown.com and sign up. And that's the end of the news for today. I do stream here on Twitch every day at 11 o'clock. I'm trying to get that locked in more and more. If you're in my chat, I appreciate it. Say hi. If you're not, then come and visit me. I would really like to have some real-time interactions. I don't run around and advertise, though, so I really am just asking people in my stream and or via my stream, via YouTube, via Twitter, via the various podcast locations. Come on over. Visit twitch.tv/ohmtown and hang out with me and talk about the news. The first hour is basically me throwing some soapboxing out there and my perspective, my experience and wisdom, arguably valuable to some and not to others. You know, in my career, I've helped a lot of people with whatever concerns they might have. And now I'd like to do it more in real time here on Twitch. So come on by and hang out with me. Like always, I go over to the front page and I refresh it. And because of my time frame and the way that my aggregator works, it seems to always be grabbing content for the Jewel Crafting channel, which has yet to launch. And I don't know if it will remain as a public channel versus just me being interested in it. I don't really grab a lot of content from the channel at this point. But it is a channel that I want to bring to Twitch. So if you're interested in jewel crafting or making, then get in touch with me. Maybe we can work something out. I am happy to facilitate this. I don't think that I can be available for every single channel of the 50 shows. Considering the time that it takes. Once a week, folks, once a week, each of these shows I want to bring to Twitch and YouTube after Twitch. If Twitch doesn't, you know, I don't know. I've been doing this for 161 days now, so it's a lot of fun, and I'd really love to have somebody to bounce this discussion off of here in the stream and have more for you to talk about. So anyway, enough rambling. Thank you very much for coming, and I'll see you tomorrow, 11 o'clock. Bye-bye.